G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Adam White's with us on a Monday morning, getting ready for a big show, and very, very puffy jacket he has on this morning. Whitey, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Shouldn't be wearing it. It's hot.
I know. What are you doing, man?
Well, you know the situation.
No, don't.
I'm not living in my house at the moment. We don't have an iron.
Doesn't matter.
Or a laundry. Or an ironing board.
Doesn't matter.
So I just need to just warm the body. And then I'll take it off in about 10 minutes.
Put it on later. No one cares about your crunchy shirt.
Yeah, that's true.
At 6 o'clock.
That's true.
It's the other end of the day they might care.
That's true.
You've got it backside about.
No, that is true. Big morning for me. I'll ask you the question. Now, we talked about this on Friday.
Did we?
Scotty's probably more the person to talk to here.
Well, let's introduce him. Scotty Gallen, who owns the News Limited Papers these days, the way he just covers it. Basically, back to front is Scott Gallen Gazette. Scotty, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel.
Great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
I'm keen to find out this question.
I know. Let's go back to Adam White.
Well, I was very keen on Justin Thomas to win the WGC at Mexico. We talked about this on Friday.
Did we talk about Justin?
Yeah, we did. We're giving score updates on him through his first round. Anyway, he leads at 15 under.
I don't recall.
We'll go to the tape.
We're known to forget
Patrick
things.
Reed and Eric Van Egmond, or whatever his name is, Van Rooyen, is at 14 under, and then Rahm McIlroy and DeChambeau at 11. And that's pretty much, I think, the ones we need to worry about.
Van Rooyen.
Now, do I lay off?
Why are they
do
playing?
Cash out, or do I let it ride?
So what is he?
I'll just have one go at one guy. Justin Thomas, he's one in front.
What odds did you get?
I got $12.
How long to go?
I've been offered $4.50 as a cash out.
How long to go?
Last round.
No. Are they starting?
No, they haven't started yet.
I'm not a cash out man.
Oh, I'm not usually.
Oh.
There's about four or five others that I'm not sure about. It's not like there was one obvious. Do I just let it ride?
Patrick Reed's
your only danger.
Well, that's what I think. He was $4.
He's your only danger.
Cash out option
just
was about...
Him. Just back in with some of your profit.
That's probably too smart.
Yeah, but I don't like Patrick Reed.
Well, then don't back anyone and just cheer Justin Thomas on.
You don't think I'd do the cash out?
No,
not for 450 if you've got 12s going on with a leader into the last round.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah, just roll with it.
I looked at it about 10 times last night.
You're second-guessing yourself in this regime, this new industry that you're in, the punting industry.
I'm on the veterans list.
You seem to be second-guessing yourself of recent work, so I'm concerned about your welfare.
No, don't go down that path.
Your welfare.
Don't go down that path.
I'm concerned about you. I've never known you to be this unsure of yourself in this realm.
You might have missed an opportunity on the weekend.
No, I don't.
Your new rule came back to haunt you.
I don't bet on women's football.
Well, you did a week ago. We all did 2 weeks ago.
Well, not me. You don't drag me into it.
It seems a long time ago, Scotland.
No, it's probably a good rule. It can throw up some interesting results.
An excellent rule for those involved. I'll give you the tip. It's a very short career span if you start investing in these industries, if you're involved in them.
Tad haphazard.
I noticed you were down at the Cattery yesterday.
I was, yes. And disappointing that umpiring interfered in what was a thrilling contest, Daniel.
What do you mean, Scott?
Well, poor old Matty McDonald, for those who didn't see it. The Cats were coming and they've been hopeless. So it was actually quite exciting.
Matty McMahon.
There you go. There was too many McDonalds.
There was Matty. A lot of Maddies and Millies and Mads, and there was. In fact, Geelong have got a backline full of M's.
I know.
Even Joey Montagna was complaining about that yesterday.
So the ball was kicked. It was dribbling through. It was going to be a goal, and Matty McMahon ran back, courageously got it, and took one step with her momentum, and the field umpire deemed that to be deliberate, taking it through for a point, and... It was in the last 2 minutes. It just ruined the game.
5 points to go within the last 2 minutes.
Yes, and it was a completely wrong call.
I agree, by the way.
Look, she wasn't under pressure. If you want to take that, they've got to be under pressure, they're allowed to walk it through. That wasn't what she was trying to do. She just didn't have time to turn around. And, they're not... I don't know. She couldn't stop on 1 metre and turn
around. Bit.
That's it. All those clichés. It was completely disgraceful.
If Kevin Butler was here dancing on a dollar type activity.
So there's only 3,000 there, but it sounded like there was 30 at that moment. The Cattery erupted.
Yeah, the Crows too good by 11 points in the end yesterday.
So the Crows, yeah, your girl. How's your girl, Danielle Ponta?
She doesn't miss very often.
She's the niece of Michael Long and cousin of Cyril and Ben Long, et cetera, et cetera. Comes from Darwin. She kicked four and just stood out with her class and skill, which they tend to do in this competition at the moment.
Well, last year she kicked 14 goals, one.
Three in the GF, I believe you were there that day.
I noticed her presence on grand final day.
You didn't man her up.
Well, we tried to. She's a forward. She's supposed to be manned up all the time.
No, she's pretty exciting.
She's pretty good. She is pretty good. 14-1 last year. Yeah. Doesn't miss.
Yeah. And
all inside 30,
yet.
I think they were.
Oh, she missed one a couple of weeks ago. So maybe she's like 3-1 or 4-1 this year.
She's pretty impressive. Kanga's way too good for the Tigers.
So that was my Sunday afternoon. Yes. Yeah, your Tigers. But it's good that they... this amuses me, Daniel.
What's that?
That the football world had to get around Katie Brennan because an article was written critiquing her performance for the year. They had to get around her. Get around her.
Get around her. I'm just impressed with your depth of knowledge.
Well, I'm the chief correspondent for our organisation.
He's there. He's a match day reporter.
So, get around her because of an article.
How'd she go on the weekend?
She was
better yesterday. I mean, they got beaten by 56 points, which didn't help.
To be fair, she is in an ordinary team.
How did your players respond, your big-name players that were under pressure, Daniel?
Who was under pressure?
Tay-Tay.
Well, Tay wasn't under pressure.
She got absolutely hammered by an opponent and
cool,
saying
useless.
That she's got no second efforts and no good on the ground and all that sort of stuff.
Well, it's not under pressure. That's just some feedback.
The limelight was on it.
Taylor was very good.
Spotlight was on it.
Taylor was very good on... When did we play? Saturday.
What about Darcy?
Darcy did a good job too. Thank you very much. Yeah, no, they played well.
So they responded. Did you get around them? Did you make calls to them?
I don't recall.
Did David
around.
Teague ring them?
I'm not sure. Teague
well, he's not them. Embracing the all club principles that we want.
That's
clearly.
Well, Taylor wasn't copying.
Was copying.
She was only copying some feedback from an opponent.
Yeah, but then the whole world looked at it and said, "Yeah, she's useless."
Then she started posting lions on social media.
Cryptic.
And stuff like that.
Well, that was for the people out there who perhaps were. Perhaps unkind with their feedback on social media.
She was taunting, I want replays, bring on Collingwood and Carlton, let's go again type.
Well, that won't happen until perhaps a final if we both get there.
Although a bit unlucky, they're impressed again.
Pies, I'm not sure if you caught this game. Collingwood Freo on Saturday, it was a very good game of footy. Both teams were undefeated going in. Fremantle now the only team undefeated in the competition. Pies had 20-4 inside 50s in the first half.
20-4?
20-4, I think it was. I think it was 20-4.
That's Geelong-like numbers, 4.
And they were a point down or something.
Oh.
It was quite remarkable, that game. Fremantle, their counter-attack is quite breathtaking, but they had to absorb enormous amounts of ball inside their back half. The Pies are very good, is what the short story is, and Fremantle found a way to get over them over there in the West.
But your conference is going to be thrilling. Melbourne were a shock defeat, so they're only on 8.
The Saints got their first win, which was great news for them on Friday Night Football.
Collingwood 8, Fremantle 1 game clear. Thrilling.
Well, the other conference was pretty good too, because they had the draw and the Q clash. Brisbane and the Gold Coast couldn't be separated on the weekend. So they're 2.5 wins. The North Melbourne Giants and Adelaide are both 2 wins, so it's pretty tight in both conferences at this stage.
Now, I've got
very
got a question coming through on social media. Scotty, have you found your bin?
That's a great question.
No, I have an announcement, yes.
I have an announcement.
I was pulling back in after my long shift at Kenya Park covering the women's football, and there's a guy who lives sort of on the corner across from me, and he was putting out his bins, and we just sort of, our eyes locked. And I looked at him, and something clicked with me. He goes... And he was a Russian gentleman, which was a bit of a shock. He goes, have you lost
your... He was Russian, was he in a hurry?
No, he started talking to me in, Russian.
Thank you.
Have you...
Craig got it.
No, I missed that.
Craig got it, it's all right.
He goes, have you lost your green bin? I said, yes, brother. Well, what's going on? Oh, the man who cuts my grass took your bin, filled it up, and I've had it for the last 2 weeks. Here you go. It's full of my stuff. I'm like, okay, thanks. It was very odd. But I didn't realise he was a Russian sort of mobster look he had going on. I'm like, no worries, thanks.
Were you on his right side, our man, our Russian man? Are we mates? Are we?
Well, I'm not sure.
We should be.
He was claiming his gardener did it and not him. But he, for 2 weeks, has held on to it, sort of ransom style. And I think when he saw me, he was like, oh, I think this bloke's been. So it's back. All's good.
Very good.
Thank you for the concern out there.
That's all right. Now,
my green bin's back. And my waste bin, my
environmental uniformity.
Bin. My environmental bin, whichever one that is. Is
what
that the
colour
one you like?
Is it? Yes.
Yeah, the orange
the
lid.
The green grass.
Orange. Yeah. It's full now because I mowed yesterday. Oh, boy. And I went
is it
just
raining?
I went just you've a little the... thing shorter.
Oh, you better talk to your co-host. Don't talk to me about this.
A little notch shorter on the mower. Lowered the blades a notch.
What are your
oh, boy, does it look sexy.
Is it going to rain? You need rain now, don't you?
See the impression I've had on him. He's now
right into
it. Lowered the blade.
I didn't know I could do that. Didn't know there was a mechanism for that.
You'll be getting the cylinder mower saying,
oh, God, it looks good.
Very good stuff. Now, Australia lost the cricket last night to South Africa.
Right.
In the
yes.
T20.
Right.
But Australia obviously lost also on Friday night.
Oh, don't worry about last night. Friday night was the one.
That.
And it's created some consternation.
Oh.
Well, they're gone.
Who's consterning?
Well, they're not gone.
They're gone.
They could be
They can't
gone.
Play the Romans from the league.
Well, no, they can't. Well, they can't play spin full stop. We talked
How
about
high
this
was
through
she
the
lobbing
series.
It, our girl?
We did mention
Well, there
it.
Was one ball that bounced twice yes. and bowled her and couldn't be given out.
That
because
was funny.
It bounced twice on
that
the
was funny.
Before the pop increase.
Is that right?
Before the
crease. Yeah, bowled twice. Yeah.
I didn't say that.
Bounced twice. Went under a bat.
Ash Gardner got bowled.
By a double bouncer?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So they went up to replay 10 minutes later. Yeah, right, stay in.
Anyway, it's really interesting because clearly the Australian girls didn't think this was going to happen, despite the fact they struggled in virtually every tri-series game that they played. But the way it's worked out, because there are only 10 teams in the competition, so it's two groups of five, and the top two go through. So in Group A, it is New Zealand, India, Bangladesh, Australia, and Sri Lanka. Now, Australia should beat Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka have got a couple of good players at the top, but apart from that, they should win, and they'll beat Bangladesh. But
New Zealand beat Sri Lanka.
Who won last night out of England and South Africa?
South Africa had a big win.
Yeah, so New Zealand and India are sitting there at the moment thinking, well, we might get through. So Australia got a couple of important games, obviously, to come, which you'd expect them to win. But the extra dynamic in tonight's game at the WACA between Australia and South Africa is that it's meant to rain. Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
It's meant to rain.
In Perth, it never rains in Perth.
No, that's right. It never rains
in Perth. 15 years
in
Perth.
They've got to get some points.
So,
well, they get what 2 points or
well, they get one,
whatever the half of the score is.
The bonus was at least Healy came back from her Adam White-like slump and was unbelievable. But then Elise Perry, the greatest player in the world, danced down to who was our girl who was getting all the wickets?
First ball, she was.
Is it Yadav? No, not Yadav.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was Yadav. Yeah, it was.
She's the best wrong-in, and she was gone.
Yeah,
and they all just could not pick her.
Poonam Yadav.
Poonam Yadav was hilarious to watch.
Well, India were $5.75 at halfway.
Oh,
so
interesting on that.
Hang on,
might be a bit of action there.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Change I wonder why he's talking about this.
Yeah,
women's football. We've got women's cricket, Daniel.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, that's not the point. The point is that they were expected to win Australia, obviously, before the game. But at halfway, the thought was, well, India haven't got enough because what they did, which I thought was quite clever, they continually just knocked it out to the sweepers and just kept getting a run of ball. And we're able to post a score on a slow pitch. And the Australians never responded to what India were doing and bring the field in, put a bit of pressure on to stop the singles because the Indians weren't going to be whacking the ball over the fence. But they just kept knocking it around and accumulating and got a competitive score.
Mm.
And with 58 spinners as they had on a slow pitch.
They mystery spinners?
It was actually going to be hard to knock that score off. Once they lost a couple of wickets and the ball got a bit softer.
So 132 they made on Friday night, our friends the Indians. And Australia, in reply, all out for 115 in the second last ball. They got belted, really. They got smacked, yeah.
They were.
So Australia have got, the big one is Monday, March 2 at the Junction Oval where they've got New Zealand. We'll see how the other games play out, but there could be a situation where they have to beat New Zealand just to get to the semi-finals.
Well, I'm not They'll get a game tonight, you reckon, in Perth. But it's only five overs you need. Is that what you need?
Well, you need 10.
Five overs each. Yeah, it's a minute. Yeah. So I reckon you can squeeze 10 in somewhere in a big stadium like that. Oh, in that scenario, it is danger signs for the Australians. It might affect the Fill the G campaign.
Well, this
campaign.
Is the whole thing. And as you know, I'm kind of barracking for Australia not to make it just to see what happens.
You're a very, very unusual man.
Let's be honest. They have sort of just... This is what makes this story fascinating. They have just counted on the fact that Australia were going to make the final.
Well, they're hoping like hell they make the final.
And it's pretty funny if they didn't make the final.
I don't think it's funny at all.
So did Glidden, Hodgson and Blanchfield. The others on the floor. It's Hodgson! Slams two home. The assist from Jason Kadee. That's beautiful basketball from Australia.
Matty Russell getting very excited there as the Boomers defeated Hong Kong 115-52, 63 points the margin. And the second youngest player since Ben Simmons debuting for the Boomers on the weekend in Scotland, Josh Giddey.
Yeah, Warwick Giddey's
son. Walker's boy.
Warwick, famous for the Andrew Gaze Melbourne Tigers lineup.
What number was Walker?
He was just the hard-working battler who wasn't allowed to take any shots.
He was just sort of arm-across sort of defender, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was the grunt man. And
he was a good player,
Drury Warwick. And the others, Leonard, and that just were all the showtime.
They were the highlights reel. Walker was the meat and potatoes. Did a great job.
Boys, kid who's a handy 200 sims, that's going
to
help.
We're going to have a chat to Will Weaver, the stand-in coach for the Boomers, after 8 o'clock for basketball fans, so stick around for that. Now, there's been an incident across the weekend, Whitey, which I think you and I need to talk about in front of Scott.
Oh.
My understanding is there's been an emergency meeting Scott has been summoned to this morning at Cadinia Park, at GMHBA Stadium.
Crisis Cats.
An emergency meeting for the emergency edition of Podcats. After the Cats went down by 10 goals to the Wooden Spooners in the Mice Community Series. Any truth to that, Scotland? There is a crisis
at the Cattery. Look, I have no comment, but I was otherwise engaged on Saturday.
I have no comment.
I was on a pub crawl of some description, which was quite enjoyable.
Was it?
I was back up in here.
In the region?
I used to live in North Carlton, Fitzroy area.
Yes.
And I went to a couple of pubs. I hadn't been there for a long time. And they've got like rooftop terraces now and stuff. Oh, it's fantastic. Anyway, I had no idea that this Community Cup action was happening. And when I saw the score, I had to double take. Then I saw a bit of the replay and Geelong are claiming they had no one playing, but there was Harry Taylor, there was Tom... There was
Gary Ablett.
There was Patrick Dangerfield.
Mike Blitzarves.
There seemed to be a lot of people I recognised. Yet they got torched. Someone yesterday when I was down there in Crisisville was suggesting that the boys didn't try in the second half because it was a bit hot and muggy. And that in 2 weeks in Colac, they're going to unveil everyone, but... I know it's practice matches, but I don't think they were expecting to get whacked by 10 goals, were they?
Well, I think it's one of those things, and we talk about this every year, that through the pre-season competition, you've just got to preface everything by saying, well, it is February, or it is the pre-season competition. We don't read too much into it. But when there are only two games now that the teams can play, and as a result of that, a lot of the teams are fairly strong on paper... You do have to go, well, do we read anything into it? And I think from the weekend, the Bulldogs look scary good at times. It was good to see Melbourne, albeit pre-season, have a win after what they had happened to them last year, just to make a bit of a statement of sorts. But the Suns, you go, well, they did have a lot of blue-chip recruits over the last two or three years, do some fairly special things.
They were fairly blue chip.
Yeah, out on the field, and you go, oh, okay.
The number one.
I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be this year, but there's a few things from a few players where you go, yeah, you could see this in 3 or 4 years being quite good.
The number one pick seemed to fit in.
Yes, so did the number two.
Yes.
They were very good, Rowell and Anderson. They were very, very impressive, must admit. McPherson was really good.
King did enough. He's the one that looks...
Sexton's kicked six.
Could be so any of it.
Now, you mentioned the Dogs. The Bont had 37.
The Bont was Ted Whitten, Bob Skilton, Peter Moore.
Very sure hands.
He was the greatest football in the history of football on the weekend. He was unbelievable. It's a bit of a shame it's February.
No. He's just setting a high bar.
But he looks as fit as I've ever seen him. He is always a strong-looking athlete, the Bond, but he looks outstanding physically at the moment. And his performance was out of this world.
But I think if you had to pick one team from the top eight that we thought could push up further based on what they did in the second half of the year, a lot of people will say the Bulldogs. So when they come out in their first match, hit 100 points, a lot of their good players play well.
But Alex Keith looked quite nice.
Yeah, but you look at them and you think there's 40 to pick from at the Dogs. There's such a deep list.
I like his.
And when they start playing exciting football like they did at times on Friday night, against a team that wanted to play well during the preseason, I just thought it was a good sign. But again, it's preseason. What do you read into it? I'm not sure.
Not too much, but just enough to get you excited. If I was a Suns fan, if I'm the AFL, here you go. Let's take another look at it. If I'm headquarters, I'm watching what happens with that Gold Coast Geelong game. Hang on a second. Hang on. Maybe it's starting to turn. Maybe it's starting to turn for our boys up there in the
north. I think it started when they re-signed those kids. Rankin and all them re-signed. Coaches, rather than leaving.
Yeah.
That's the first positive sign we've had out of the
draw. That was real run against that. 37 shots they had. That's a lot. I don't care what season you're playing in. 37 shots a goal against a quality opposition is a lot of shots a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at the games that were played across the course of the weekend,
Is Brisbane hangover happening already?
No.
Can we read into that?
Of the five games that were played, the lowest winning score was 98. All other winning scores were over 100. So that's also a reasonably good sign.
Yes. I wonder how that correlates with previous editions, preseason editions.
By the numbers.
It's more... I think you get more offense than defense in preseason competitions. So that's a good thing, no doubt, by the way. But I think you probably lean towards offense more than defense in preseason.
If Charlie Dix can play 20 games, Port will be okay. He hasn't been able to do that.
No.
But if he can, they're not a bad team.
Yeah. You also get the propaganda through this period.
Oh, no.
There's always one. I think I know where you're going.
You say...
A player,
fill the gap. Team,
but, who loses weight and gets a lot of kicks in the first practice match.
Christian Petracca.
Thank you. There's always one every year.
Yeah,
he'll start in the forward pocket round one and not go near the midfield.
I think the funny one.
You know that.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure about Christian Petracca.
Full stop.
No. I actually think it's going to be a huge year for him because he is out of contract, and. I'm not sure there's a lot of love between him and the coach.
Oh, no.
And I think it's his year.
Hang on.
I think it's his year. Is this
6:32?
No, I just think that probably Simon.
They hate each other.
Simon's not really sure where to play him. He's maybe not playing where he wants to play. He hasn't lived up to his expectation at this point. As I said, he's out of contract. This is a big year for him. And often there are players who are out of contract who have very big years.
Can I ask the question? He's in his what year? How many years he's been running around?
Five. One of which he had missed the whole year with that knee.
I love it when the penny drops, but at what point someone hasn't said, brother, just lose 5 or 6 and run more. Why does it take till now for that to happen?
Because he's out of contract and he knows that coming up at the end of this year is his opportunity to earn himself a lot of money at the peak of his powers. You know, this is his year. So it'll be interesting to see.
Or does it say a bit about Melbourne's development and they didn't make him do it? I don't know. I'm glad he's doing it.
This is year six. Missed that first year in 2015. Year six starting now.
Well, this is his time. If he's going to be any good and he's going to be that $600,000-$800,000 player, whether that be at Melbourne or somewhere else, this is his year. He must play well because if he doesn't, he's just going to be that $300,000-$500,000 play maximum.
I reckon you'll get more than 3 and 4 because that's the average number these days. Nice sneaking to the 6s and 7s regardless, I reckon. But he's 24. And importantly, I think there's been a change of mindset for a few of the players at the D's under the new physical conditioning coach.
Yes.
I think there's been a change of mindset about the captaincy too.
Looks like our man Max,
RSN
understands that another Inner Sanctum captain will be
Jack Viney
taking the whistle or the armband.
No love.
Jack Viney out, Max Gorn in.
Player vote.
Not confirmed just yet. just yet.
It's very strong.
We've been
male.
Talking about it for weeks.
Not confirmed.
The
talk to the players first.
The club that I'm talking about is
Yes.
Is Essendon. Essendon was always pumped up website and stuff that they've had this great win, very impressive, blah blah blah. They played Melbourne, who had four players on their list, I think, that played.
Just the eight, I think it was. Just the eight listed.
What was going on there? More injuries, what
happens there? How does that happen?
Well, where are the other players coming from?
Well, that'd be the VFL contingent. Yeah. But
where are the
AFL players?
No, well, they were playing in the game against... who'd they play? Adelaide.
So, well, this is an unsanctioned practice match.
Yeah, pretty much, because Essendon didn't play this weekend. They've got to go to West Coast next week. So they've organised this game. But Essendon had Merritt and Zaharakis and a few others rolling around. And Melbourne had people that they just found off the street walking down the streets of Berwick. Want to have a game.
Well, was that a good win, though? They're up and about. That's it's the way to kick off your season. No confirmation about the crisis at the Cats. 12 of the 18 games last year in the preseason competition were won by teams who scored 100-plus points, 12 of the 18, and two of the remaining six were 99 and 95.
So can't read anything into that.
High-scoring affairs by the numbers is what we do here in RSN 927.
Beautiful stuff from Norcare. South Africa have done it. The celebrations begin here in Port Elizabeth. They are ecstatic with this performance. This is the sort of game that good teams win. Now they were thrashed in the first game at the Wanderers, totally outplayed in all departments. They wanted to bounce back. They wanted to prove a point. They've done exactly that. Congratulations, South Africa.
Congratulations indeed, Port Elizabeth overnight. South Africa too good in the second of the three T20s that they will be playing against Australia. As you heard in the commentary, got absolutely rogered in the first one. And the second one bounced back. These are the games the good teams win. Ben Horns covering the series for the Daily Telegraph joins us on the line. Good morning, Ben.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're going very well, thank you. Now, it was a very important occasion for South Africa, you'd think, to rebound from a dismal first game against the Aussies, and they put on a good show, didn't they? Well-deserved victory.
Yeah, very gutsy performance from South Africa because, like you said, they were terrible in the first game. And, it was important for them, important confidence booster. They are sort of at a bit of a crossroads with their cricket at the moment. So, they've still got a very good side, particularly very good bowling attack. And they came to the fore at the end tonight and, really shut down Australia when the Aussies looked like they were, destined for victory.
Have they got enough in the batting stocks? I mean, we know Quinny de Kock's a star and Du Plessis is more than capable. But outside of those two players, you wouldn't back too many of the others to make runs consistently, would you?
No, that's their big weakness for sure. I mean, de Kock was excellent today, made 70 at very quick pace at the top. So that set the platform. But no, you're right, they're very thin after that. And that's the big concern. But they do have the prospect of De Villiers coming back. AB de Villiers coming back for the World Cup at the end of the year, so that would obviously be a major boost.
Benny, we were cruising 324 in the 15th over, and then we only made another 19 runs. What happened?
Yeah. Well, look, it was a difficult wicket to bat on, particularly progressively as the innings went on. The same thing happened in the South African innings, actually. They were flying after the first sort of 10 overs, and then the breaks came on, and they really struggled to put up a decent total. So it was a strange kind of wicket, but Australia should have got there. Probably the turning point was Steve Smith was caught, playing a shot he probably didn't need to play, and it was an absolutely superb catch in the outfield. If you get a chance to have a look at it from Faf du Plessis sort of running in and just managed to pick it up before it hit the grass. So it was an amazing catch, and that was probably the turning point because the Australian finishes that came in after that just weren't able to get going.
And they couldn't give Davey Warner the strike. Was he stranded a bit watching most of this?
He was. It was sort of funny. It just, like T20 games often are, I suppose, it just all happened quite quickly. With three overs to go, Australia needed 25 off those last 18 balls, and... at that point there, you would have had them in front. Basically by the end of the over, Mitchell Marsh was out, then Matt Wade and Agar followed. So it was one of those things that just, it went from Australia being in the box seat to South Africa being in the box seat just in a few balls. And in that time, you know, Warner was at the other end.
Ben, take us into the environment in South Africa at the moment, because after the first game that Australia absolutely belted South Africa, the blowtorch seemed to be put on them by the South African media. So as we've said, it's a great response from South Africa, but what's the environment like at the moment over there?
Look, it's sort of been hard for me to pick up, really, just in the sense that, you know, the crowds here for the T20s are pretty festive. You know, they're really just here having a good time. They've been packed houses both games so far. You know, beneath the surface, there's a lot going on. You know, a lot of, frustration and discontent with the board and the people running Cricket South Africa. I think Faf du Plessis' demotion from the captaincy hasn't gone down entirely well either. So, look, it's a difficult time for them. They are sort of transitioning. A lot of their very good players have retired in the last couple of years. So, yeah, look, they're going to be tested. But in 2020 cricket, I think they still put a pretty decent team on the park, particularly if they do get AB de Villiers back. So, test cricket-wise, I'd be worried about them by the time Australia's here this time next year. But, you know, in the shorter formats, they're still competitive.
Tell you who didn't turn his toes up yesterday, that was Tyson Fury.
30 times in a row I backed it up. People always write me off. They look at me fat belly, they look at me bald head, and they think, oh, you know what, he can't fight, he can't punch, he can't box, he's clumsy. You know, I toppled the second longest reigning champion in history, Vladimir Klitschko, in Germany. You know, bums don't do that. Bums don't do that. I had me mental problems, I had me issues. I was out the ring for nearly 3 years. I came back and I beat him last time on 50%. I said, you're not fighting that same old man that was out the ring for 3 years. I said, you're fighting a real Gypsy King this time. He fought the best Tyson Fury. We both fought the best of our primes. I'm 31 years old in the prime of my life, and so is Deontay Wilder. And he got what I told him he was going to get, knocked out.
As Wilder's in bad shape.
The king himself, unbelievable scenes here in Vegas yesterday. Big time boxing was back. Tyson Fury gave Deontay Wilder a bit of a lesson. 14 months after the dramatic split decision draw, it was the Gypsy King carried into the ring on a throne, which was most amusing by itself, put on an absolute clinic. And Ben Damon saw it all up close. Fox Sports chief boxing reporter joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Ben.
Yeah, good morning. Quite incredible. Still can't quite believe what we saw. You mentioned the ring entrance, the best I've ever seen, and then the performance is right up there. What he did in the ring was just unbelievable, given that he said all week he was going to go out there and try and bang with the banger, and he did it, and he knocked him out. Just phenomenal. Tyson Fury is a freakishly good boxer, and now he's a big puncher as well.
Yeah, and he talked about ending the reign of Vladimir Klitschko after 19, I think, title defences. Wilder was going for his 11th title defence and undefeated to that point. Like, he's a big-time performer, isn't he? If there's pressure on and there's a big moment, he's able to stand up, Tyson.
Yeah, well, he did that last night, that's for sure. The first victory you mentioned against Vladimir Klitschko was one of the ugliest heavyweight world title fights we've ever seen. But last night was just a clinic. It was a spectacular performance. He hurt Wilder early, and he just never let him off the hook. It's quite remarkable to think that in his most recent fight against Otto Berlin here in Vegas, he looked very, very ordinary. Probably should have been stopped and lost that fight on cuts. But this time around, only a short time later, he sacked his trainer, he got a new one, and he turned into a boxer who can punch really, really hard. And that sort of a turnaround in that space of time is just a phenomenal training performance and a phenomenal performance from a boxer as well to turn himself into something that really he's never been before. And the performance that he produced surprised everyone, most of all Deontay Wilder, who I don't think expected him to take it up like he did and certainly didn't expect him to punch like he did. So it's one of the all-time great heavyweight performances and probably the greatest training performance we've ever seen by Sugar Hill Stewart, who took over after Ben Davison was sacked and turned his man into something that he's never been before.
Now, he's an unusual character, our man Tyson, licking blood off his opponent's shoulder. Was an interesting...
Yeah, delicious. that's something different that we probably didn't expect. I think he mocked licking blood, didn't he? I don't know if we can see there was any actual contact, but...
Very close, Benny.
Very close, yeah. Well, it's probably too close for comfort, to be honest. But, yeah, he is a different sort of a character, that's for sure. At that point in the fight, he had Wilder beat. Wilder couldn't find his feet and was all over the place. It was pretty clear that he had some damage to an eardrum or something, certainly, that was affecting his balance. So Wilder was gone, and yeah, Fury took the opportunity to find a very strange way to play up to his fans. But he always plays up to his fans, and there were plenty of them last night. Some very sore heads through Vegas, I would imagine, today, because the English contingent was enormous and they were raucous after this victory.
If you're 19 years of age and you're an amateur and you're playing on the latest European tour, it's a home event, albeit. I reckon you go in thinking, I want to play well this week. But if you win the tournament by 8 shots, maybe even you have surpassed your own expectations. Stephanie Okereke is the young woman who did that on the weekend at Bonneville in the latest European tour. She joins us on the line. Steph, good morning. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys. It still doesn't feel real yet.
Well, that was my first question. Well, how are you feeling? Because you're an amateur going into a professional tournament, ladies European tour, and you put on one of the greatest clinics that has been seen for some time.
Yeah, I have no idea as yet. I don't know how to feel, but everything's kind of hitting me this morning with all the messages still coming through and stuff. But yeah, I had a bit of confidence going to the event because I was playing good, but I had no intention to win it by 8 shots.
Well, I'm not sure there's too many that go into tournaments hoping to win by 8. But you had a 2-shot lead in the end of the third round. So going into the last day, you lead by 2 shots. Were you nervous?
Yeah, I was really nervous on the first tee, but that always happens. But yeah, I knew I had the 2-shot lead, but I kind of had nothing to lose. That was kind of my mindset. So that, I guess, that kind of helped me stay calm. And then, you know, I got off to a hot start and everything went well from there.
So, Steph, after you birdie the 10th, you look up at the scoreboard and you're 10 up. That's extraordinary.
I actually had no idea how much I was leading. I hoped I had a little lead, but I didn't know it was 10 shots because I had no idea how the group in front was going. And then one of the spectators come and go, "Oh, you got a pretty big lead." And I was like, "Oh, don't choke."
10. Choking with 10 is not bad.
You shouldn't choke from there, Steph.
Yeah, you hope not.
Now, you've got some pretty big decisions to make very quickly regarding turning pro or not.
Yes, I do. I've got another event this week that I could play as a pro, so I kind of have to decide in the next 48 hours, but I'm still just weighing up the pros and cons.
Are you ready for this decision, Steph? I mean, this has obviously come pretty quickly. Have you been thinking about this? Are you ready to make this call? Because you get 2 years exemption on the Ladies European Tour as a result of the victory as well. So it's a good ticket to ride.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping to turn pro at the end of this year anyway. So this is kind of just like an extra year guaranteed. So I'm still weighing up my options, but I'm kind of leaning towards that way. But yeah, I think I'm ready. I mean, I just won an event, so hopefully that gives me a bit of confidence.
So what's it like waking up as a winner on the European Tour, but knowing you couldn't collect the 36,000?
Euro. It's okay. Hopefully more comes my way next week or in the future.
Did it help with the nerves knowing that you weren't playing for money? Because often the professional golfers talk about the fact that you start thinking about, oh, I could buy a car here, I could put a deposit on a house, all sorts of things when you're getting that winning position for the first time. What was going through your mind as you were playing those last 9 holes?
Yeah, well, obviously I didn't have to worry about the money, but I think I'd be okay when I play for money. I do a lot of punting with my friends back at the home golf course, so, and I always win back at home. I play good when I play for money. So hopefully that continues in the future.
Now, Leilani Mitchell is enjoying a bit of feed-up time at the moment because the Southside Flyers, which she's dominating for in the WNBL, are through to the WNBL Grand Final after a 2-0 series victory over Adelaide. 68-65 was game one, and then on the weekend, 82-79 on the road, clinched the deal, and now get a chance to sit back and watch the others punch each other up. Leilani, good morning. Congratulations on a grand final appearance.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
It's great to have you on the program. 18 points for you on the weekend, a really dominant performance. You and Amy Clydesdale did a hell of a job with the bulk of the scoring with Becky Cole. What's made this team so tight and so cohesive? Because it's a brand new team in the WNBL.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to Cheryl and the team that she's recruited. You know, she most important for her was just recruiting top quality people, you know, not only basketball players. So there's no egos on the team. Obviously, we're full of heaps of talent, but nobody's selfish. We all celebrate each other's successes and want each other to do well, and I think that's really taken us through to the grand final so far.
So did you know that at the start of the season that you had something? Because it was 17-4 through the home and away season with the Flyers. Did you know that it was going to be really positive from the start when you first got together?
Yes. I mean, just looking at paper, we had a pretty good team. But obviously, coming from Canberra last season, I also knew that they had a strong team. And that Melbourne was doing some things, the Boomers as well. So, you know, I think I wasn't quite sure, and I didn't think our chemistry would click as quickly as it did. But like I said before, that goes to Cheryl and the type of people she's recruited. Some of the girls I hadn't played with, so I wasn't sure how we would all mesh. But it's just been so easy and so great from day one. We've all enjoyed each other's company on and off the court.
Well, Arnie, what about your captain, Jenna Hare, her wrist injury? Is she going to be okay next week?
We're hoping so. She's actually got a follow-up appointment with her doctor later today. So our fingers are crossed and we're hoping she can come back and join us for grand final.
She might ruin things. This is going pretty well, this thing.
She won't ruin things. She'll make everyone's job a little bit easier. So we miss her out on the court. She was great for us all season. Very unfortunate injury. And obviously she missed out on the Opals with the qualifiers as well. So you know, the biggest thing is just getting her healthy. We don't want to rush her back, but we're really hoping that she can come back.
So, Leilani, you spoke about the new team. How many of the Dandenong Rangers players are involved in this new Southside Flyers?
Well, I think when Cheryl took over the team, when Jerry took it over, I think there was only two players left on contract, just Sarah Blikov and Rebecca Cole. So they had a lot of work to do. Brought a lot of people in that had been a part of the Rangers in the past, a few years back. But, yeah, there was only two left over from last season.
So how do you get, it's a buzzword in modern sport about culture, but how do you get a culture happening so quickly and a winning culture developing so quickly? Obviously, good players help and good coaching, but to get everyone together so quickly as you've been able to do?
Yeah, I think we all just realised that we had a heap of talent. But, you know, playing a team sport and basketball especially, you really have to, if you want to be successful, which was our goal was always to, you know, make it to the finals and then eventually the grand final and win that trophy at the end. But I think we all knew that we had the talent, so that wasn't going to hold us back, but it was just whether or not we meshed. And I think everyone was willing to make sacrifices in the game in order for us all to come together and gel and be successful.
Well, Lani, what about the Opals? You were over in France recently. That was a crucial part of the Olympic qualification. There was a few little bumps, but you got there in the end?
Yes, we did get there in the end. Look, it's a bit hard. Obviously, we went in the middle or just at the tail end of the WNBL regular season, and we went away in November for a tournament, but we get there probably 2 days before, and we literally have 1 day of training together. So there's a lot of new faces and people that haven't played together, or at least not recently. So it's a bit hard to get that chemistry and just to know, you know, who we're going to run the plays for, how people are going to find their shots. And so we did eventually get there, but I'm looking forward to the lead up to the Olympics. We'll have a few more practice games and trainings, and we'll be able to work on our chemistry a bit more.
Well, you've been there before. You were part of the 2016 campaign for the Aussies where we fell in the quarterfinals. What was that experience like for you? And do you think it's with this squad, you can go further and have a more pleasant experience at the Olympics, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, Rio was quite devastating. Something we don't really like to think about or talk about too much, just for a lot of reasons. But I think with Sandy in charge, you know, I think she lets all of us individually play our games, and she doesn't limit us in too many ways. So I think the biggest thing, you know, we've got talent. Obviously, we've got Lizzie inside, and we've got shooters and Rebecca Cole. We've got Jenna. I mean, you could just go down the list of all the talent we have. But like I said, to win on the big stage, same here with WNB on the grand final, you have to have that chemistry and you have to be all on the same page, especially when those big moments come. And hopefully we get that. And I think we have the potential to do that with the Opals as well. Hopefully it all comes together. We've got a little bit of time to practice, which is good. So fingers crossed that it all works out and everyone stays healthy and we'll have a bit of redemption from Rio.
It's his 44th career victory in supercars on the streets here in Adelaide. Well done, Scott McLaughlin.
Well done, Scott McLaughlin, indeed. We hear that a lot in the Virgin Australia Supercar Championship. Back-to-back champion and started his defence again in the best fashion with a win at the Superloop Adelaide 500 across the weekend. I think we've interrupted him brushing his teeth. Scotty, good morning.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm just about to. I'm getting ready for the day. It's my fault. I got up too late.
Well, you were busy yesterday. You had a long day yesterday driving a lot of kilometres in a very fast car. So I'm prepared to give you half an hour of sleep in. That's okay. How'd you feel about the weekend?
I feel really good. Obviously, for me, consistency was the key this weekend because you can easily come out sort of where Shane is and be sort of 150-odd points down. So for us to get a second and a first, where we certainly probably weren't the fastest car on the weekend. We were good, probably top three, top four car, but I don't think we had the outright pace. And we just executed. We dotted our I's and crossed our T's and got it done. And they're the best wins sometimes.
There was a few talking points from a pit lane perspective on the weekend, on yesterday, particularly. We've had Shane Van Gisbergen's error in the pits where I don't think they fueled him up enough. They had to go back in and have another stop and fuel him up. And then James Courtney had a situation in the pits as well. They went in too early before they were allowed to. And you had they were telling me on the coverage anyway, Scotty, you can tell us if it's true or not. You were 2 seconds overfilled or something, which cost you a chance to get out in front of SVG at one stage.
I didn't realise I was overfilled, so thanks for giving me some ammo for the debrief. But
they buggered it up, but they could have cost you the race, mate.
No, well, I definitely was a bit disappointed that we didn't get out in front of Gizzy before in that first stop, because track position is key, and we've got that with the pit box. But so I was surprised by that, but I thought they had something up their sleeve. But look, at the end of the day, did drop my bottom lip a little bit because I was a bit frustrated with it all. And then once I sort of picked myself up, I was all right.
Scotty, do you get find out in the headset, you know, that the opposition's made this mistake? Or when does it sort of become to your attention?
No, look, we basically... Shane pitted, and when he came out in that last stop, he was a fair way down the road, and I thought I would be a lot closer. So I was sort of like a bit... One, frustrated, but I was like, that doesn't seem right. And then, sure enough, two or three laps later, the guys are like, they've had an issue with their fuel stop, and, he's going to have to come back in the pit. Basically, that made me the effective leader. So that was probably about 30 to go, 20-something to go. So I was, obviously, my first reaction was like, crap, that's not good for them, but we just got to take them when we get them, and I just wanted to, bring it home.
Did you sense with everything that happened with Holden and then Jamie Wincup wins on Saturday, it was like the gods are against you for this weekend?
I think for the year, certainly, it's got a Holden guy's got an extra sort of leg up in regards to wanting it to win so bad. But, we want to spoil the party for sure. So for me and the team, we just focused on ourselves, like I said, and honestly, it was... a really solid weekend. So if we have this year is going to be all that consistency. It's so tight, even tighter than last year. So it's going to be important.
I was interested listening to you afterwards, just immediately after the race, where you were obviously happy you won, but you were a bit agitated. You just didn't seem your normal self after a victory. What was the things that sort of upset you the most?
No, I was pretty low key because I knew that Shane had a pretty difficult race, and look, he was the faster car, so I'm being pretty real with myself and realising that, look, it was nice to win, bloody good to win. You got to do all the details, but we weren't the fastest car, so I guess in some ways you sort of like take it and you just move on, but knowing that we've got a lot to learn, and for me the focus is just next race.
And this might sound like a silly question, but is that kind of a good thing that you weren't the fastest car in, that it gives you that challenge. Yet, like, you've been able to win, and you've been clearly the dominant driver over the last couple of years, that there is so much improvement to come, and that maybe other cars are coming.
Yeah, look, I think you'll see on different tracks this year where, you know, there's going to be cars that are good on long tracks, short tracks, street tracks, you know. So you're going to have your mixed bag of results. You know, if we can just keep our average finish up there, I think, you know, in 2018, our average finish was fourth. And, you know, we won the championship at a car that was nowhere near the fastest. So, that's, again, got the mentality. And I guess in some ways, like, now I know what it's like to win a championship like that. It puts me in a lot better headspace going into the year.
So did Glidden, Hodgson and Blanchfield. The others on the floor. It's Hodgson! Slams two home, the assist from Jason Kadee. That's beautiful basketball from Australia.
We like when we play beautiful basketball. Absolutely we do. When the Aussie Boomers were in action, they were in action against Hong Kong yesterday in the Asia Cup qualifier. 115-52 was the scoreline. Emphatic by the Boomers, who rebounded after a loss to the Tall Blacks on Thursday. Will Weaver is the coach of the Australian Boomers at the moment. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, guys. How are you all?
We're going really well, thanks, buddy. Just firstly, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the games, what's it like coaching Australia?
Yeah, it's just the most special honour that anybody could be afforded, much less someone that's not from these shores originally. This is my sixth year working with the program, and it's the most meaningful part of my career to date, and the reason why is the quality of people and players that put their hands up every time to represent Australia. So quite a special event for us.
Good stuff. Good to hear. Now, Thursday was a disappointing performance against the Tall Blacks. What did you take out of that in the build-up to this game against Hong Kong yesterday?
Well, we have six debutants on the team, and choosing to not select players from the NBL Finals meant that we're going to have a smaller set of experience to choose from. And in the FIBA game, the physicality of it and the nature of coming together in 2 days and trying to put together a pattern and certain rotations and schemes that can hold you in good stead in a game is tough. So with the Tall Blacks selecting their representatives from finals teams and us not, we knew that was going to be a challenge. But the guys, I think, have courted themselves really well. The young guys played great, and it was pretty special to have four Brisbane Bullets get to take the floor together to start the game, being that the games were in Brisbane for the first time in a long time. So proud of the guys, the way they battled against New Zealand, came up short at the end. But improved a lot, and I think that showed yesterday.
Now, Josh Giddey, we all know Warwick, his father, he was a famous player with the Tigers. Josh is a 17-year-old, 200-centimetre guard. Where have we found him from?
He's fantastic, yeah. I mean, the same place really good players tend to come from, which is really good parents. Josh, unique for him to come in a little late. He'd been in Chicago at the All-Star Weekend for the NBA Basketball Without Borders events, where he was selected as an All-Star, and flew straight to Brisbane, came and joined us, practiced, got 1.5 practices in, and then we threw him out there for 15 minutes yesterday, and he played great. Not just him, but Daniel Greta and Angus Glover and quite a few guys now that are all just a tick over 20 or 21 years old that have a chance to be a part of our program over the course, not just the 6-game qualification series, which is what these first two games were about, but moving into future major tournaments, which we're now trying to qualify for.
So you beat Hong Kong by 63 points, so it wasn't a close affair.
Did we cover?
Yeah, that's right. What are you looking for as coach from your players in that situation when, you know, the result's beyond doubt very early on in the piece? What are you looking for?
The way that we play and the commitment to the next possession is always the thing that you're striving for in basketball, and that's really the game within a game. So that's hard for any set of athletes, much less a sort of all-star team that's been come together after just a couple of practices together, and a lot of whom are excited, understandably, to wear green and gold for the first time. But the hope is that just like last qualification period where we were able to win the Asia region and earn a high seed for the World Cup, that over the course of these 6 games, these 3 qualification windows, that we can grow to a point where we've got some continuity, both in terms of players and schemes, and that we can go into the Asia Cup in 2021 and handle ourselves.
So you obviously know the players because you've been, as you said, in the system now for quite a while. But was there anyone that has surprised you over the last couple of matches that you thought, oh, this guy might be a bit better than I thought?
I think the guys from the Illawarra Hawks, despite being on team with a losing record, lots of really exciting young prospects in that group. Angus Glover in particular, he's represented Australia at past hoop summits and other sort of international events, has suffered a number of knee injuries, and coming back from those just has all the characteristics of somebody who's quite good now and is going to be really good. But even the older guys that have been a part of campaigns in the past, Cam Glidden and Nathan Sobey were on this World Cup team in China with us last year, and their improvement just in the last year is remarkable. And so I think the same kind of guys we love having a part of the Boomers, coaches love signing onto their teams and often are the kind of guys that are doggedly pursuing greatness in their own right. And so that's always a blast to see over the course of time those guys improve.
I reckon if you're a Western Bulldog supporter, you sat back on Friday night at Marvel Stadium watching the game against the Kangaroos, albeit February in a March Community Series game, and thought, you know what? We might have something again here at the Western Bulldogs. I wonder what Tory Dixon was thinking about all of that, who joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Tory.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us, mates. Now, what were you thinking? It was a pretty emphatic performance, 44 points by your boys over the Kangas. Now, we know it's preseason, we get all that, but it was pretty slick part of that work from you guys on Friday.
Yeah, no, it certainly was. We obviously went into the game wanting to win and going in with a really strong side with everyone that was available playing. So, yeah, there were some very, very impressive plays and a couple of guys that just really impressed. And, yeah, it was a good performance.
Tori, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Bonts game was the best preseason game in the history of football.
I'd probably have to agree with you there. He's just gone to a new level and, you know, it showed over the whole preseason and in that simulation just tore us apart, and he's obviously continued it straight into the March series.
What was it? Like, he had a hip there, I think it was the year before. Like, why physically, you look at him and just what he was doing, it's just like something's gone up another level.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. Like, you just look at him in sort of awe of sort of what he's doing. He's just so, he's so clean. He's obviously put on size. He's so much stronger in the contest. He's just so well-balanced, both feet. And, you know, he's even kicking goals and he's doing everything at the moment. And, you know, you can sort of just sit back and watch and just be happy that he's on your team.
It's terrifying to think he could be better considering how well he played last year, but has the captaincy had anything to do with him potentially going to another level, do you, maybe?
It's a hard one to say. It could, but it also, you know, might not. I don't think he's the bloke that's going to kind of phase and, you know, wilt with his form. He's an exceptional young man and, you know, he's led the way this whole preseason on and off the field, and you know, he's inspiring, and he's obviously inspiring all his teammates.
We're talking about your team earlier on in our program, and just commenting on the fact that there are so many players that could very easily put up their hand for round one. Your depth is something that's pretty special at the moment, the Dogs.
Very, very true. It's a tough team to get into, and you know, we've probably had four or five guys out there, you know, we're almost first pick, so... you know, it's a tough team to get into at the moment. The depth goes all the way down, and that's what you want at good clubs. You want plenty of depth in case you get injuries throughout the year. So it's a credit to everyone. You know, they've put in the work and had a great pre-season. And, you know, it's a long way off before, well, not really a long way off, but a few weeks off sort of round one, and everyone's trying to put their hand up. And that's all you can really do, train hard and put your hand up. And, yeah, hopefully all that takes care of itself.
Alex Keith seemed to have fitted in quite nicely.
He certainly has. He's another one that in the match simulation has just been an absolute rock down back. It's like, all right, we're getting this one through, and yep, here comes Keithy. So he's been fantastic, actually. Just everything he's done, the professionalism that he showed, and you know, having a mature head down there, and almost that rock at the last line of defence has just been fantastic for us.
Do guys like that, I gather you saw a bit of him, but you probably didn't follow his career that much, and then he comes over and you go, oh, okay, he's better than I thought?
Yeah, you always take note. Obviously, I play in the forward line, so, You know, you always take note of those big intercepting defenders that are always marking the ball zone. Got to try and bring that ball to ground. But, yeah, I did take note of him for a couple of friends over in Adelaide, so I always watch probably a few more of their games. But, yeah, he's come over here and he obviously came over with a bit of an injury. But the way he's tackled rehab and, you know, coming into a new club and just leading by example in the way he trains, it's a real credit to him. And he's, you know, showing his performances on game day and in match simulation. And, yeah, it's been great.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.